Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck will join us in 1 hour. We'll get all the latest on the DeAndre sweepstakes with Tim Hasselbeck at noon. But Willie D, D-Mace, happy Tuesday. How we doing?
Hey, doing wonderful. Happy birthday, Derek. DJ.
Happy birthday, DJ.
It's his 21st birthday today.
Uh-oh.
My son is, he doesn't put, like, you know, some kids want to have parties and all this other stuff. And, you know, I'm thinking 21 is your big day, you know. So I sent him a text.
First drink ever.
I would think, but he's like, nah. So I sent him a text this morning saying, how does it feel to be 21? And this is what he sent back. I'm going to show you first, Willie. That's what he sends back.
What? What is that supposed to mean?
The dog. He sends back the ginger with a little cone on her head saying that's how he feels today. I don't know what that means.
What does that mean?
I don't know. That's his mood right now.
Oh,
a dog with a cone on?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's like a 180 from what I would think.
Exactly. He's at work right now at Vandy.
Okay.
He works in their research, one of the research departments. But I don't know if it's because, I don't know. He does stuff like that. He's a troll. He trolls me every day, all day. But happy birthday, 21st birthday, Derek. Love you, dude. And, you know, we'll see you later.
Well, happy birthday, Derek.
Yes.
Enjoy your day.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy D-Mace your day with your son on his birthday.
Yes, absolutely. We all will. His mom, sister, and I will go out to dinner today and have
good.
A cake and just relax, you know.
Enjoy.
I told him I would take him on. I said I wanted to take him on Broadway. He was like, no, I was playing with him. But I said, we can do a party bus. He was definitely like, no.
You should do the party bus that has like a hot tub in the back of it. It's not just a party bus. It just makes it even grosser, which I don't know who came up with the idea let's have a public hot tub.
The public hot tub, I don't get. Like, the Arizona Diamondbacks, you ever watch a clip? They have a pool. It's a retractable roof, and most of the time, because they're in the desert in the summer, it's closed. The roof is closed.
Mm-hmm.
But they still have people at the pool and a hot tub. And it's mostly a bunch of dad bods and kids.
Yeah.
The kids are having a great time.
Oh, kids having
but
fun.
But the dads have, like, they're just, either they just don't care, which, you know, I respect a dad that's got a good dad bod that just doesn't care to go shirtless.
Let it go.
That's fine. Just let it go.
Let
but
it
do
go.
They realize how ridiculous they look in the pool at a baseball game?
It's the same with Jacksonville. When Jacksonville had do Jacksonville still have the hot tub in their thing?
A hot tub?
Yeah, the Jacksonville Jaguar. It was like a pool area.
When is it ever cold enough in Jacksonville for there to be a hot tub?
It was like it's like a pool, not necessarily a hot tub, but like a pool.
Okay.
I know they had it. It was there a couple of years ago. I don't know if they still have it. But I know they did back in the day.
The older I get, the more and more I realize things that I loved as a kid now give me major heebie-jeebies. Like hot tubs, absolutely not. No way. Even public pools sometimes are just...
Yeah, you gotta watch who's going in those public pools,
boy. I don't know.
Little kids with the hands all dirty, you know.
Water parks,
a lot of chlorine.
Exactly.
Ugh.
No, I can't.
Water parks. I used it. I grew up in Orlando.
So, yeah.
That was a big thing, go to the water parks.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a little.
Little Jeremy.
You don't ask. You don't worry. Just try to. Yeah. Oh, it's very
Jeremy.
Yeah. Just try to keep your focus on the rides.
Yeah. Good rides.
Yeah.
It's all about the adrenaline rush.
Yeah. No question.
All right. Well, Tim Hasselbeck will join us in 1 hour. But I want to start here because I feel like, you know, in life, there's always the trickle down effect or maybe like the unintended consequences of something. One thing happens and it's a domino effect. In sports, it's really no different. In baseball, for example, you know, your ace tears his UCL. He has to get Tommy John. Well, that affects the entire rest of your bullpen. That affects the entire game plan for the rest of the season. Football is no different at all. in the offensive line, like Nicholas Petitfrere, for example. Nicholas Petitfrere gets a 6-game suspension, but that shakes up a whole lot of things on the offensive line. And as we learned last year, last season, unfortunately, we saw firsthand that the offensive line, if there is one change, one injury, it doesn't just shake up the line itself. It also has a major domino effect, a major trickle-down effect, if you will, with really the rest of the offense. Taylor Lewan goes down at left tackle. You don't really have a solution at right tackle. And Ryan Tannehill gets killed. So I think that the Nicholas Petitfrere situation is similar, because we can talk about what the Titans are going to do on the offensive line. Should they go out and get another piece just to plug in for those 6 games? Do they shake things up? Does Peter Skoronski go to left tackle? Andre Dillard to right tackle? Do you move? There's so many different variations and little puzzle pieces that you can put together to create the solution on the offensive line. But as we learned last year, the trickle-down effect, the domino effect, doesn't just stop on the line. It also has effects within the rest of the offense. So I was in for Jared on Friday on Stillman and Company. We chatted with Trevor Maddich. I asked Trevor Maddich, former offensive lineman, college football and in the league, asked him, who do you think the Nicholas Petitfrere suspension is going to be most detrimental to? This was Trevor Maddich.
But it'll also affect Tannehill. And this is one of the reasons I think that the...
This was Trevor Maddich on Friday on Stillman and Company on really where does the rest of the offense go from here with Nicholas Petitfrere's 6-game suspension? Who does that affect the most? But who do you think that is going to, in those 6 games, who is that going to affect the most with Nicholas Petitfrere's absence and the shakeup on the offensive line?
Derrick Henry. I mean, last year the offensive line was, everybody was doing the best they could, but with the guys that they had healthy, it was just extraordinarily unfortunate to put that offensive line in front of Henry. And Henry still averaged like 4.3 yards per carry. And so this is going to mean he'll get more pounding at the line of scrimmage than he should.
Again, that was Trevor Maddich on Stillman and Company on Friday. Said it's going to hurt Derrick Henry the most. It's going to affect him the most. And even last year, with a lackluster offensive line, a bunch of backups on the offensive line, Derrick Henry still rushed for over 1,500 yards and was the second leading rusher in the NFL. But at what point can Derrick Henry no longer be your great eraser that kind of overcomes for some of the shortcomings maybe at other positions?
It's going to be difficult. I think if you look year to year, when you have significant injuries on the offensive line, you can look at examples where a team finds a hero and figures it out, and then times where it ends up being sort of an Achilles heel. Last year, they just could not figure it out over the course of the year. They never did get settled and get good, solid offensive line play because, you know, that left tackle spot, it just didn't happen. Now, you go back a year or two before that. I'm trying to think. What was the year that they had Sembrilo and Quesenberry? Like, they had major issues with Lewan, but they found guys. Like, Quesenberry was a find, right? He was an out-of-nowhere guy that...
Is that 20 or 21?
I think it was 20, because in 21, he became the starter, right? Quesenberry at right tackle, and then they let him go and drafted Petitfrere. So I'm thinking it was 20. But and then there was Sombrio who came to the rescue. In years past, Dennis Kelly came to the rescue a few times. So sometimes you can find it. Like, we're so... It's fresh in our mind, the Dennis Daly fiasco, right? And it just, that is the name that will always go synonymous with last year. It just,
right.
They couldn't find those guys. And then the guys that they tried in place of him were even worse.
Yeah.
So let's just hope that the depth is better this year and you can find a hero for 6 games. What complicates it for me, Derek, is you have already shaken up your offensive line. So you don't have any other chemistry that's built up for the most part. You got some new guys anyway. So that's going to create another level of challenge, I think.
Yeah, it does. And I've looked at this stat before because teams typically, you know, you can tell which direction, or you can tell which, you know, side of the offensive line teams tend to run behind, or, you know, typically the strongest side is usually the side that they run to more often. You know, some teams, it doesn't matter whether it be left or right. Philadelphia, for instance, they can run. But I'm sure if you really broke down the numbers for Philly, you will see it probably skews from one side to the other. Well, the Tennessee Titans, Trevor, he could be spot on with this, because the Tennessee Titans, you know, based on what PFF has said, they are running, they get the most yardage on the right side of their offensive line. I'm talking about the right, you know, from the right guard, right tackle, right guard, you know, on out. They had the second most, not the most, but they had the second most. The most they had was between the center and the guard, left guard in the center, which was majority Ben on at center. And then you had who was at the guard last year?
Aaron Brewer.
Aaron Brewer, yeah. So Aaron Brewer. So that was their strength between Ben Jones and Aaron Brewer. But on the right side, they got the second most yardage out of Nicholas on his side.
So PT.
which tells me he was doing a good job in run blocking. Mm-hmm. And so they chose to run to that side a little bit more often. Or you're right. They did run there. They ran there 79 times to the right side. Now in between the center and the right guard, they ran 70 times. So that right side was the side they chose to run on a lot.
And how many times did they run to the left?
They ran to the left. The most they ran to the left was 58 times between Ben Jones and Aaron Brewer. Uh-huh. So Ben Jones has something to do with all of this.
Which is interesting, because I wouldn't look back on this past season and say, man, oh, man, that Aaron Brewer.
Yeah, but, I mean, as much Aaron Brewer was more of a – I think he was a liability in the pass blocking, because, you know, those big guys are coming at you. Mm-hmm. And they are targeting you because they know you are a – you know, you're light in the behind, so to speak. So they're going to come at you. But from a run blocking standpoint, he did a pretty good job, because it was a lot of combo, you know, between he and Ben. So he pushed and then go up to the next level. Well, on the right side, that was their – they predominantly, other than Ben Jones in the center, they ran majority of their plays to the right side, which tells me that's the strength of the offensive line. Now, when Taylor Lewan got hurt, that may have skewed a lot of it. You know, he got hurt early on, so they sort of ran away from that, and Dennis Daly wasn't a help at all. So it's going to affect Derrick Henry. I don't know if we will notice it necessarily, but it will affect, unless they get this offensive line balanced. If they can get a balanced offensive line where they're blocking just as good on the left side as they are on the right, I would imagine that for the first six games, unless someone shows themselves in training camp, they will run more to the left than they do the right until Nicholas comes back. Now, if somebody shows up in camp and shows that he can ball, then all bets are off. But I'm thinking, instead of them running to the right side when Nicholas is out, I think predominantly they're going to run from the center to the left and left tackle and left guard.
That'll be interesting, because it's just a new group of guys. Uh-huh. It's a new offensive coordinator, somewhat of a new scheme, I guess. But you've still got Derrick Henry. There's a couple of really big questions here. Number one, I think what you're asking too, Caroline, is Derrick Henry still capable of overcoming a average to below average offensive line? Like, I don't think you've ever – Emmitt Smith, give him all the credit in the world, but he ran behind one of the greatest offensive lines for a few years. Same thing with, like, a John Riggins, right? Yeah. It was the line was – I don't want to say more responsible, but had a lot to do with the success of the team, right? Those five guys, you could bring those guys back every year, so many great guys. And I wonder if there would have been a big drop off without Emmitt Smith. Mm-hmm. And that's no knock at him at all, but he benefited from that. Derrick Henry's never had a line like that, but yet he still put up these.
I don't think many people have ever had a line like that.
And that was another thing that made Barry Sanders so great. People that argue for Barry Sanders being the greatest. He never had a great team, number one, but he definitely didn't have a great offensive line. Mm-hmm. He's still running for all these yards. So that as Derrick Henry is now a year older, can he still sustain it, knowing that they got issues on the offensive line?
Yeah, but I think with Derek, Unless the offensive line is horrible, which they it was close to it last year. Many say it was horrible. Yeah,
it was horrible.
But I think, you know, Henry is sort of the equalizer. I think he's sort of that he's in that mode of a Barry Sanders. Now, I'm not talking about the shiftiness and everything else. It's what, you know, Barry didn't need a great offensive line. He was great. Derrick Henry doesn't need a great offensive line because I think Derrick Henry is on that cusp of being one of the greatest, you know, running backs that have that's played in the NFL. Now he has to put some more numbers up, a few more numbers up in the next couple of years. If he continues to, you know, run the way he has been running, I mean, the sky's the limit for this kid. But he's the equalizer in all this. I think as long as you don't, as long as you just stay on your block, you just hold your man, Derrick Henry will get yardage. If he, if the only way you stop Derrick Henry is if you get penetration early. We all know that. That's
no question.
Only way you stop Derrick Henry. Right. You got to get early penetration before he gets the football. When he gets the football, it's hard to get him down. Whether you have a really good offensive line, as we've seen the Titans they once had when he rushed for 2,000 yards, or if they have a bad offensive line, which we saw last year, and he still rushed for 1,500 yards. He is the total equalizer because, in essence, he is a big offensive lineman himself with speed.
That's what I always call, you use the word equalizer, I use the word the great eraser. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have any deficiencies on the offensive line, Derrick Henry is going to cover that up and make it look like the best offensive line there is. If you don't have, let's say Ryan Tannehill, for example, in 2021, didn't have a great season, but the Titans were still the number one seed in the AFC because of what Derrick Henry and the defense did. And even when, I know Derrick Henry was out for, what, six games in the 2021 season? Yep. He was still the great eraser of the offense. So that's what I view Derrick Henry. He's always able to overcome maybe some shortcomings elsewhere. But how much longer can he do that? And how much more can the Titans rely on Derrick Henry doing that? And I know the Nicholas Petit first suspension was out of their control. It was out of the Titans' control to a certain extent. But how much can we continue, even with a, you know, the offensive line in question for the six game, the first six games of the season, how much more can we continue to say, oh, well, it's fine because Derrick's got it. Derrick's got it. At what point is it just not fair to him anymore? 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Trevor Maddich says that Derrick Henry will be the player most affected by the Nicholas Petit-Frere suspension. But Trevor also expanded upon what becomes a lot more important now that Nicholas Petit-Frere has been suspended. And do we agree with Trevor's sentiment on that? We'll get into that coming up next. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, will join us in 45 minutes. Caroline Willey, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game. Caroline Willey, D-Mace is brought to you by the New Zen Sports Sportsbook, the only sportsbook in Tennessee with a cash rewards program. Betting just got better, so download their app today. I was on with Trevor Maddich on Jared's show on Friday. I asked him who is going to be most affected by the Nicholas Petit-Frere suspension, other than, obviously, Nicholas Petit-Frere. And Trevor Maddich said Derrick Henry. That Derrick Henry, although last year he had the second most rushing yards in the league behind a below average offensive line, to put it nicely, how much longer can he continue to do that? How much more difficult does his job get when he's, you know, running behind a line that's inconsistent or still trying to create some of that cohesiveness, some of that balance? But it doesn't just stop at Derrick Henry. Trevor Maddich also had a thought that it emphasizes the importance of adding something else. This was Trevor Maddich.
But it'll also affect Tannehill.
But who do you think that is going to have in those? That's okay, Nick. That's all right.
Computers are not my favorite thing,
that's
but we'll
okay.
get to it.
That's all right. We're getting to it.
Here we go.
But it'll also affect Tannehill. And this is one of the reasons I think that the it now becomes more important that they sign, free agent receiver.
DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, DeAndre Hopkins. Mm-hmm. Space in the name. Because he'll make it so that Tannehill will have more options open more quickly than if he's not there. And it's not just Hopkins. It's also the other guys that now will be covered by different people because the top cover guy will be on Hopkins probably. And so it'll mean guys like Kyle Phillips at the slot receivers, should he stay healthy, will probably be able to get open quicker. And Tannehill's going to need that, because you have to assume that there'll be more third and, you know, five or six plus situations where he'll have to throw than if they were able to keep the offensive line together all the way through camp and through the first six games. You just have to assume that. And you've got to assume that defenses are going to game plan for it. And that just means that the more options they have available for him to hit quickly before the pass rush can get there, the better. And sort of ironic that a suspension on the offensive line makes signing DeAndre Hopkins all the more important.
All right. What do we make of it? Do we think that the Nicholas Petit-Ferrer suspension makes it even more important to add a DeAndre Hopkins?
No, whether Nicholas is there or not, you need, you know, you put yourself in a position where you need another pass catcher. So I don't think it's more, I don't think you need D-Hop more now or more important now that Nicholas is not there, that, oh, we got to have, like, we, oh, my goodness, we got to have D-Hop now. Because if you don't have an offensive line, you just don't have an offensive line. I don't care who you have at the receiver. You can't run three-step drops every game, every play. You just can't do it. So whether Nicholas is playing or not, D-Hop, they need another pass catcher. What would help this receiving core is not just the – I want people to understand. It's not just the idea of bringing in Hop or not having Nicholas. It's the growth of Treylon Burks, Chigakonkwo, those two guys, even Kyle Phillips, because what they do is I can get downfield now. That, more than anything, there are two things that defenses are just scared of: a bruising back like Derrick Henry with speed, and a wide receiver with speed that can catch the football. Those are the two things that they're worried about. D-Hop, they'll worry about him, but he's lost a step or two. You know, if this was 3 or 4 years ago, absolutely he would put fear in their hearts. But he doesn't, because what defensive coordinators think, like, listen, he's not going downfield. He's not, so we know how to neutralize that. The guy that we need to worry about is the guy that can go downfield and catch the intermediate routes, i.e. Treylon Burks. That's the guy that's going to help open up this offense. So to me, whether you have Nicholas or not, it's going to be critical for Treylon Burks, and if indeed they do get D-Hop, that, you know, they help make this offense more of an efficient passing offense and not like it was last year. Because if they had people that just could catch the ball last year, this offense would have been much better, but they didn't have it.
Another thing I think about when I hear Trevor start to talk about Tannehill is something we've been asking, and we're not going to know because, as we've been saying, they're mm-hmm. just in shorts,
yeah.
right? We're not getting to see much. But if you assume that the offensive line is going to be an issue at least in the first 6 weeks, if not for the whole season.
Which is probably your hardest stretch of the season, mm-hmm. those first 6 weeks.
Oof. Do you feel like Tannehill will still have the escapability and ability to run efficiently like he has? That has been a big, big strength of his over the years. Mm-hmm. But after the ankle injuries, remember, there are two different ones. He re-injured it, had to have surgery on it. What's he going to look like? He's a year older. Yeah, as you get older, it gets harder to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. But now you have a significant injury to a wheel, mm-hmm. right? So that's something I'm watching for. That could be not a good storm, right? The bad line, quarterback not as mobile. Mm-hmm. I worry about that. That would keep me up at night.
It's a very fair concern. And I want to continue the conversation coming up next, because I have a thought on what Trevor Maddich had to say. And I'm kind of half with D-Mace, kind of half with Trevor Maddich, and also I don't think we're talking enough about Ryan Tannehill in this situation. We'll get into that coming up next, and of course your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game and the Game at Nashville app. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, will join us in 30 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on the latest going around the league. But we're breaking this down. What Trevor Maddich had to say on Stillman and Company on Friday. He says that he thinks that Derrick Henry will be most affected by the Nicholas Petit-Frere suspension, just trying to run behind a line that's kind of up in limbo a bit. He also added that, look, let's not forget Ryan Tannehill in this situation. The offensive line also impacts Ryan Tannehill. And Trevor Maddich said that he thinks that this makes signing DeAndre Hopkins just that much more important. And D-Mace, you said, you know, it's been important. And I would agree with you that, hey, it was important before Nicholas Petit-Frere got suspended to get DeAndre Hopkins, because you desperately need help at the wide receiver position with whatever's going on the offensive line, with whatever's going on with the rest of the team. You need more depth and you need more firepower at the wide receiver position. But I also kind of hear what Trevor Maddich is saying in that even though priority was on 10 to go get DeAndre Hopkins, I feel like the Nicholas Petit-Frere suspension just does kind of tip it over a little bit. It makes it that much more important. Because the idea is, like, DeAndre Hopkins is the kind of receiver to me that he can say, hey, just throw it in my general vicinity. I'm going to catch it. He's just that kind of guy. He's got those sticky hands. So when the ball needs to come out quick, having a guy like it, when the ball needs to come out quick, assuming that it does in front of an offensive line that's still kind of building that rapport, in front of an offensive line that's going to be shaken up a bit, at least for the first 6 weeks of the season, I think that Ryan Tannehill needs that kind of target that he can say, okay, F it, you know, DeAndre's down there somewhere. Kind of like what A.J. Brown was for Ryan Tannehill throughout their, you know, their careers together. It was F it, A.J.'s down there somewhere, ball can come out quick, and Ryan Tannehill can protect himself that much more.
Yeah, but I just think in, you know, three-step drops isn't, you know, if the Titans wanted to go, teams typically, if they have a bad offensive line, they're either max protecting or they're going three-step drops, which means slant, you know, quick outs, hitches. We could run that eight-yard in route that AJ used to run to perfection here. So, and then you can use play action a little bit. So I'm not too much worried about Nicholas not being there in three-step drops because, again, if I have the offensive line last year, three-step drops would have worked, but they just didn't have – the problem wasn't – okay, the problem wasn't the offensive line in regards to three-step drops because as soon as you get the ball, boom, you're at your third step. Now you're waiting for your receiver to get open. Offensive line – they just, as long as I get my hands on you, I can hold you up for a minute. They need people, you know, they just couldn't get off the ball. That had nothing to do with the offensive line. If they had guys that can get off the ball and catch the ball, the offensive line, as bad as they were, they would have converted a lot of third and threes if they didn't run the football with Derrick Henry. Just because guys get open quickly in this league. You got to be able to get open quickly in this league. So to me, that doesn't affect Nicholas not being there doesn't affect what they do from a three-step drop standpoint. It's when you get into five-step and the play action at times. That's where it hurts not having Nicholas, because if I got to turn my back to that right side, that guy on the right, I need someone to protect it. Or if I'm doing a five-step drop, I need someone that can hold up at least for 2 to 3 seconds. Three-step drops, I only need you to hold up for a second. You know, and if they get open, I'm hitting you quickly. I don't care about what's going on your offensive line.
I remember learning this as a young media person trying to understand the NFL game. Jeff Fisher would talk about this a lot with the pass rush, right? He would say, well, you know, don't expect us to get a lot of sacks this week because this team gets the ball out quick. Exactly. They're three-step drops. You're not going to get sacks. You need to make sure you're getting him, get your hands up in the passing lanes, but you know you're probably not going to get sacks. You still want to get in his face as much as you can, but you're not going to get the sack. So I wonder, too, about the play-action pass. It's been such a base part of the offense going back to Arthur Smith, and it was such a huge reason why they were a great offense in 2020, right? That's when it really was at its peak, when you had those – fake it to Derrick Henry, hit that crossing route to A.J. Brown or Corey Davis, and it is open space in the middle, running after the catch. Jonnu Smith running after the catch. They got so much off of the play action. With the new offense, I wonder where that's going to go. Is that still going to be a big part of it? Because, like you said, play action out of necessity. You can't do three-step drops out of play action. It's right. play action. Yeah. It's going to be 5 to 7-step drops.
And that's
right?
Ryan Tannehill's bread and butter is play action. Yeah. When this offense is at its best, it's play action.
And you got to stay on time, right? You can't – you don't – doesn't work as well 3rd and 8. You know, you don't do play action. So that's why it's so important to stay in rhythm. On the offense, that's what kind of got screwed up last year.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, potentially not having someone that is capable of holding down that right tackle spot until Nicholas comes back, that's going to be imperative. I think at this juncture, really, it's more imperative to find that right tackle than it is. And I know it's sort of hypocritical because I said they need another pass catcher, which they do. But it's more important to have that right tackle to solidify that right side. If I had to pick and you said, well, pick it, do you want a right tackle or do you want a receiver? I'm gonna pick the right tackle. I just am because my offense, the way I run my offense, the way Titans run their offense, it's play action. They get a lot of their play action because of Derrick Henry. You suck those linebackers up, you hit that intermediate route, and off they go. So I would rather have a solidified right tackle in place than a D-hop. It's not diminishing.
Like hypothetically? Yeah, like for this Titans team right now?
If I had to choose right now, because we know Nicholas is going to be suspended for 6 games, and we've already said this 6 games is an important 6-game stretch, I would rather have that right tackle that's going to solidify my offensive line that I don't have to worry about. Now I can run my whole offense because I don't have to worry about my right side. I don't have to sort of overcompensate because the right side of my offensive line isn't good. Give me an offensive lineman, a right tackle, because I believe my left side is solidified right now with Dillard, Skoronski, and Aaron Brewer. I need a right tackle. So if I can get me a right tackle, it doesn't mean in its totality that it's more important. But right now, having that right tackle for the first 6 games is more important than having that pass catcher.
I'm curious what's out there right now. If they wanted to,
I don't know,
bring in another, just bring in somebody else to be a candidate. They've got the existing guys that they've had in the system for the last year. But is there another guy that you can find at the right price? That is just another guy that might be able to fill the gap for 6 games. I'm wondering what that's looking like right now. I'm sure they're looking, right? You got scouts that are looking at these things all the time. Do they bring an extra guy in there, a veteran guy that just needs a job? Or, remember, this happens every year. Guys get cut in the last preseason game. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at those rosters saying, okay, they can't keep all these guys. This might be a guy we jump on the waiver wire. The problem is you're bringing that guy in right at the end of camp, right? He doesn't have a lot of time.
People are trying to get that tackle.
Right.
And if they do decide to go that route, I would rather the Titans go after a guard on the waiver wire that late in the preseason than a tackle. So in that, I would say move Andre Dillard over to right tackle because he has been a swing tackle throughout his career in the NFL. Put Peter Skoronski in at left tackle. He's been a career left tackle. He was a left tackle at Northwestern. And I think that if you can get those two anchor pieces on the outside, I'm not discounting the guard position, but I think it would be easier to find a guard to just plug in and play, whether that's off the waiver wire or, you know, somebody on this team already who's kind of a depth piece on the offensive line. I'd rather plug that guy in at right guard or left guard than I would at right tackle.
That makes a lot of sense, but I'm going to introduce the other side of the coin, something that I learned from Brad Hopkins when he was talking about this. This was a couple years ago when they lost Luan. And I can't remember the specifics of it, but what he said made sense to me. And that was, if you could just, let's just play devil's advocate.
Yeah,
you
I know
plug
what
in,
you're saying.
You plug in the right tackle for 6 games. You keep the other 4 guys where they're going
to
be.
So you only have to switch up one.
Right, instead of juggling 3 or 4 guys. So Brad Hopkins subscribes to that. Even though it's a tackle as opposed to a guard, because you're right, it's probably easier to find a guard than a tackle. But if you can plug the guy in for 6 games and you can keep the other four guys gelling, you know, mm-hmm. on the same page, working together, that he thought was the better solution.
Yeah, you would rather, you know, you would rather have your left side solidify and find that right tackle than to take your left tackle, put him at right tackle, take your left guard, put him at right left tackle, yeah. and then try to insert other people that may not have been in this offense during the preseason.
Yeah. And then knowing you got to switch it all
exactly,
back.
Knowing
when you
again, I got to switch in six yeah. games. I got so you know what? I'm going to find me a left tackle, I mean a right tackle, that can be our swing guy. So when Nicholas comes back, now he can be a backup. Or if he's playing well, just leave him right there and deal with it that way. So I would rather do that than start switching everybody around, because now he's been working on this side. Now you're asking him to work on this side. Now you're moving his guard to tackle, because you say, well, he played tackle in college. Well, you're right. Well, college ain't the pros. It's going to take him a minute to really catch up and learn that position from a pro aspect. So I would rather have a veteran, a rookie, and a what? Aaron is what? Aaron Brewer is what? Fourth, fifth year? Yeah. I would rather have that solidified on my left side and a new guy at the right tackle position.
Do we consider Andre Dillard a veteran?
Yeah, he's a veteran guy.
I know, he's been in the league a while.
He hadn't played much, but he understands this league, I believe.
Hope.
You would hope.
You have to hope.
Let's
if he's
hope.
Going to be your left
we
tackle.
We haven't seen him play yet.
You haven't seen him play much.
Yeah, you're right about that.
But you talk about a guy that's going to be under the microscope in training camp. That's a guy that is so important, right? If they hit on him, that's going to look like a brilliant Rand Carthon move that solved a big problem without having to pay the freight.
For a left tackle,
which is a costly position. So there's a lot riding on that.
But I could also argue that they did pay a very costly price for a left tackle. They used their first-round pick on one. They're just not using him at left tackle.
But I don't think they thought of him. The left tackle position for him probably is, we're going to start him at guard. If it doesn't work out at left tackle, then we can try him at left tackle. But we want to put, you know, we want to have the best offensive line together mm-hmm. at once. So as we sit now, Dillard's at left tackle, Skoronski is at left guard, Aaron Brewer's at center, and then so forth and so on.
Yeah, I see the line of thinking, and I think that probably is their approach of we'll put him at guard until he's ready, and then we'll move him. I just don't agree with it, but I see the line of thinking. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Trevor Maddich says with the Nicholas Petitfrere suspension, he thinks that makes getting D-Hop that much more important. But as we discussed yesterday, there could be another player in the DeAndre Hopkins sweepstakes. But how real is it really? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, DeMays, 102.5, 106 for the game. Caroline, Willie, DeMays, 102.5, 106.3 the game in the Game Nashville app. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, will join us in 10 minutes. A little bit of a programming note. Ryan O'Reilly was originally scheduled to meet with the media this afternoon at 4 o'clock. That has been pushed back to Thursday at 11:15. So just anyone that was looking forward to hear Ryan O'Reilly, that'll be on Thursday.
I'm raising my hand. I'm looking forward to hearing from Ryan O'Reilly.
I am too. Yeah. I love Ryan O'Reilly.
Good player.
He is a good player. Good player. What did I get into this? Because I was on with Trevor Maddich on Friday when I was filling in for Jared on Stillman & Company. He said that Nicholas Petitfrere's suspension makes getting D-Hop all that much more important for the Tennessee Titans. And if you didn't think I thought that it was priority 1A for the Titans to go after D-Hop, I think I might agree with Trevor Maddich just a little bit. That made it just that much more important to add another weapon in the pass game for Ryan Tannehill, to add another offensive weapon for Derrick Henry. Mm-hmm. But what are the DeAndre Hopkins sweepstakes looking like these days? Because we heard a Jeremy Fowler report over the weekend of the Chiefs are still kind of hanging around. They're still on the periphery. But I've kind of been in the line of thinking of I don't think that the Chiefs are really that much of a contender to land DeAndre Hopkins. They just don't have any money. So Soren Petro, who was on Sports Radio 810 in Kansas City, was on with Chase today. Chase asked him, hey, the exact question I think we're all wondering, how legitimate of a contender are the Kansas City Chiefs to land DeAndre Hopkins? This was Soren Petro of Sports Radio 810 in Kansas City.
dollar figures would be the same. But a $3 million base last year with escalators that could take it to $10.5 million. I think he got to $8.5 or $9 million overall. That's the deal that Donovan Smith took, just under $3 million in base with escalators that can take that up over $9 million. If you're willing to take a deal like that, and I would assume for DeAndre Hopkins, the starting number would be bigger, the payouts for the incentives would be higher. All the incentives are always also tied to team success, team wins, snaps in an AFC championship game. That was one of them that Juju Smith-Schuster missed because he went out hurt in the first half. If you're willing to do that, you can be a part of the equation. But if the Titans are worried that the Chiefs are just going to go blow away with big bucks, that's not going to happen. That won't be the MO. You have to want to play with Patrick Mahomes. You have to want to play for Andy Reid. You have to want to be a Kansas City Chief in this situation to make it work.
And that was Soren Petro of 810 Sports Radio in Kansas City. Well, if there needs to be a desire to play with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, well, how is that not there? Of course he wants to play with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. Who doesn't?
He don't want to play with him bad enough at this point.
At this price.
At this price and at this point. Now, again, you know, Kansas City or whoever else that want to choose to jump into this DeAndre Hopkins, you know, sort of tour.
Apalooza.
Yeah, they can. But at what price do you want to jump in it? You know, Kansas City feels, I'm sure Kansas City feels, listen, we can use you, but do we need you? No. You know, you need us more than we need you. Basically, that's how it is, because we have the quarterback that everybody wants, or everybody wants their quarterback to be like our quarterback. We have the offensive coordinator and slash head coach that everybody wants to be like. We got a defense that is getting much better. Why wouldn't you want to be on this team? If D-Hop, because we don't know, obviously, he wants money. And, you know, I would never, hey, listen, get all the money you can, bro, because once it's over, it is over. So get all the money you can. But in doing that, do you want to get the money and not compete? Like, not compete. I just couldn't see going to a team. And not to say, listen, things could turn around for the Titans and they can win the AFC South. I'm not saying that they can't. But if I had the choice between a team that I know has the best quarterback in the National Football League, a team that, you know, I'm in my 30s, and this team looks as if they're going back again, why wouldn't I sign with that team if they get close to the monies that I was wanting? Why would I go anywhere else? Now, again, is he fueled by money or is he fueled by winning? Which one is it? He hasn't won much. He has not won much in his career, D-Hop. He hasn't, because the Houston Texans have been bad. And then he went to another bad team in the Arizona Cardinals, you know. So he hasn't had a lot of winning. But I don't understand. I like, go win. And not to say the Titans are not going to win, but if you're
going to win like Kansas City,
if you're not, what are you waiting on? That's my thing. What are you waiting on? Are you waiting on more money? I'm not sure more money is going to come down the pipeline. I think right now, as it's been, you know, reported, the Titans are being aggressive. If the Titans are being aggressive and no one else isn't, why not just sign with the Titans now? If money is what you want, because it doesn't seem like anyone else is willing to go to the number that the Titans or New England has offered.
I heard him say in the, I believe it was the thread.
Yes, the thread.
Yeah, the thread.
Things have died down a little bit on the thread, by the way.
Double T.
I heard every,
Double
that's
T.
all I could hear Friday and Saturday and all week. Oh, the thread that they're
going to get a shiny new toy.
Yeah, it's a new toy. Come on, Willie.
It's quieting down a little bit. But he said, I want to play it on 37.
And he can do it.
So I would introduce that if I am in his inner circle and I'm having this discussion, what are the best options? I would say, where is the place that gives you the best chance to resurrect your career and keep you springboarding to where at the end of next year, people are saying, okay, this guy is back, and now he's ready to sign that next contract where he does get the money he's looking for. Like, you might have to take a step back this year where the market's not great, mm-hmm. the timing's not great. You're coming off a year where there's some question marks. There's PEDs in there. Mm-hmm. If you have a great year, that becomes water under the bridge, right? And people are like, wow, look at the season he just had. So if he wants to play for 30, you know, until he's 37, to me, that's the way to go. It's not about the money or the winning as much as where is the opportunity where I can resurrect my career. Winning would be nice, for sure. Money would be nice. Mm-hmm. Combination of the two would be great. But if I want to play until 37 and that's a goal and that maybe gets him to the Hall of Fame, that's what I'm looking for. And again, I don't know, like you're saying, Derek, I don't know if the market's going to change a whole lot. The only thing that I can think of is they shake up Chris Jones's contract in a few weeks or whatever as they work on that, and that frees the Chiefs up with a little more flexibility of what they could offer him.
But, I mean, just look at, you know, you have to look no further than Juju Smith-Schuster, and he's going to be Exhibit A for me in regards to D-Hop. Everybody wrote Juju off, you know, and rightfully so, because toward the latter part of his Stiller, you know, tenure, it wasn't good. He was hurt. You know, he wasn't the player that he was prior to AB leaving. Mm-hmm. He became the number one. It's different when there is a bona fide number one in AB and you're the guy that's sort of reaping the rewards and all of a sudden you think you're a number one. And then that true number one leaves.
Until you get smacked in the
mouth.
And
then you realize, I really ain't a number one. I'm more like a two. I wish that number one would come back. Well, his career was flatlined. Then he goes to the Chiefs. And everybody, oh, Juju, he's nothing but a fat boy. And he's nothing but a, you know, a tight end.
He was kind of chunky.
Yeah, he was kind of, but it resurrected his career. Uh-huh. Playing with Patrick Mahomes. It parlayed in him into getting a lucrative contract with the New England Patriots. Now, we all know how New England Patriots do that contract. They can cut you tomorrow and don't have to pay you nothing. But it allowed him to get a bigger contract because he played 1 year with Kansas City. Those are the things that you got to think about if D-Hop wants to play into 37. Where can I go? Not necessarily to make a lot of money. I can go somewhere. They can sweeten the pot with some incentives. I can make some money, but more importantly, I can catch a lot of balls, win, and be a focal point of an offense. And then that next go around, I can sign a bigger contract.
You got
if
leverage.
I stay healthy.
You got much more
I got
leverage
now.
He's got
Juju
no leverage.
Had leverage.
Right now.
He had leverage because of what he did. He 100%. Won a Super Bowl, and he almost had 100 catches, if not 100 catches.
So if you were D-Hop, you would sign with Kansas City?
I would sign with Kansas City. As long as the money wasn't, they would have to sweeten the pot a little bit for me. You know, it can't just be $3 million, you know, base, even though that is a lot of money.
Probably a lot less than what's on the table.
Exactly.
For the
it would have to be somewhere around, you know, close to what New England or Titans are paying.
But would you do it at three? Soren Pedro said it's probably going to be a Juju Smith-Schuster S contract.
With the money that D-Hop has made, I would do it for three, for a year. I would do it for three. To play in Kansas City, to get a shot at winning. The only way you're not winning is if Patrick Mahomes is not under center and they're doing everything possible to make sure no one ever touches Patrick Mahomes.
Patrick Mahomes does everything possible
exactly.
to make sure no
so
one touches Patrick
I
Mahomes.
I may just go to Kansas City and play for $3 million and catch 85, 90 balls for 1,000 yards and about 10 or 12 touchdowns because that's what he will catch.
Let's get Tim Hasbeck's thoughts on that. Well, he will join us coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.